everyone. Welcome, everyone, to the Locker Room Access Mailbag Podcast with Chris Havlicek, TW, and myself, along with Zach Carey. Following the UVA-Gonzaga game, TW organized, I guess, and received 7 questions total, 5 from Twitter and 2 from
Locker Room Access Forum.
Yep. Locker Room Access Forum. I actually noticed a lot and read a lot of comments on the UVA Hoops page.
Yeah.
Some that were highly critical of some players, and some were, I guess, saying, you know what, we're okay. It's okay. And if they, even if things aren't okay, we're still okay.
Right. Yeah. Right?
At the end of the day, like, I got to bring this up. Like, I just got the phone with Ty, and we were talking about it. And first of all, big congratulations to him because he just got his 3rd year contract approved.
Nice.
Extended. Wow. So, yeah, very nice. So, hopefully, we were just talking. I said, okay, now time you could buy me a car. he's like, you don't need a car in New York City. Anyway. So, but we were talking about, like, the reasons why these guys get contracts and the reasons why UVA and schools like Duke and Kentucky, why they're on TV, is partially because of the critical masses, right? And it's also because of the huge supporters. Yeah. So, we were basically, he's Key and Kihei are very close. And we were talking about Kihei last night, and I was like, he did so well. I sent him text to his dad. And it's important. Like, he was saying to me, his sophomore, Ty's 2nd year, how he would read some stuff and it would really bother him and upset him. And his 3rd year, he was like, whatever. They can say whatever they want. I don't care. But as a parent, I'm not good with it. I'm not. I am like, I lost sleep when I would watch, when I'd read comments. I would want to comment back. I'd want to threaten everybody and tell everybody, if you talk about my kid, I'm coming to your house and I'm going to beat you up. Right. And so what I actually started doing, I started friend requesting people who were making negative comments. Right? and just in my mind, okay, if my kid starts playing well, let's see what you have to say when he starts playing well, because I don't want to hear it then.
Yeah.
Right? So I think a lot of the comments were so unfair against Kihei.
It bothered me. I mean, obviously, big Kihei fan, friend, whatever, however you want to say it. But that, when I read it, it just made my, I was like, yeah, furious. I was just sad to see it because it's just like, this guy's doing everything. And then yet he's a lightning rod for comments. It's like, strange.
He was pummeled in social media. And even let's say, like, those things in social media are indelible. Right. So you're talking about a 20-year-old kid, 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old kid. And if he reads that, how damaging it can be. And he's out there. It's not like he's lack of effort. And he, by the way, he played well. Okay, he had 6 turnovers. Okay. He lost the balls a few times. But he scored 19 points. And a couple of shots go the other way, go in instead of go in and out. He's got over 20 points. Mm. He played his ass off yesterday.
He played really well. I mean, I think the thing that went through my head was like, he had to play that way because the team needed him to be ultra aggressive. And what comes with that is potentially turnovers. So we don't play that way often, right? So, but for him to push it, it's because he felt like this is what the team needs. We need an aggressor. He played that role because he saw what was needed. And then he gets punished. Like, it's like, he can't win, right? He's just like, hey, we need this. I'm going to do that. And yeah, he becomes a lightning rod.
And defensively, he was fine.
Yeah, and I think Kihei holds a special place in a lot of Virginia fans' hearts, right? Because he was a big part of the national championship year and started that game. And someone in the comments said there's a direct correlation between criticizing Kihei and how much you understand about college basketball. And I think that holds true. He's invaluable to this team, especially right now, where there's a real kind of, I don't want to say a void in leadership, but there is a cluster of leadership and no one has really emerged. And watching the game yesterday, you know, as I was evaluating Kihei, he was really the only guy who had the guts to say, I'm going to get this one and I'm going to play really hard. And he created his own shots and did really well. Yes, he had turnovers, but keep in mind, we were playing the number one team in the country with a bunch of guys who haven't played together after a 10-day layoff. So for all the Wahoo fans out there that are panicking and licking their wounds, I get it. but the best is yet to come with this team. And I feel really confident in saying that.
We were texting earlier, all of us have, and right now we're not playing with Gonzaga. They are really, really, really
Honestly, nobody is.
Nobody's come within, well, West Virginia came within 7 points, seven points, right? And I didn't watch, I couldn't see that game. They are so much better than everybody right now. And Virginia is solid right now. And the thing, as you said, have, this team has not had a chance to play together, right? Not 10 for the last 10 days that they haven't played. And before that, there was another 2 weeks nearly. And even all summer and fall with COVID, the opportunities are very limited. Gonzaga is talented. They have a great balance of older players with experience who are really good and younger players who are really good. They have seven guys who can really play, right? And I'm not sure individually we're good. We're not great. Collectively, we're okay. And we'll continue to get better.
Yeah. That's the benchmark.
That's right. That's right. And when you look at, you know, when you look at UVA, when they won it, they had three things. And we mentioned this last podcast, but they had familiarity with each other. They had trust with each other and they communicated well. Okay. We don't have that yet. Gonzaga had that. They knew what they wanted to do. They had been playing together for a long time, with the exception of Suggs, really. And they trusted and they played the game of their lives. I mean, Kispert will remember, will be telling stories about that when he's 80 years old in a rocking chair. And hats off to that kid. I mean, he was really impressive. That was as good a performance as I've seen in a long time. And watching his kind of post-game interviews with various media outlets, I was really impressed with his poise and his class and his demeanor. And you know what? We're gonna watch that guy for the next 10 years in the NBA at some level.
So Nick, I'll just jump into the questions. First one we got, James Connor. Is it time to simplify and execute a few things well offensively?
Yeah, I mean, I think the question offensively is, how are you going to put the guys that you have in positions to succeed, right? And you know, when it comes down to simplifying an offense, I don't know if we need to simplify things. I think we just need to sort of put our guys in the situations where they're going to succeed. You know, I think you need to run Kihei in ball screens, which he did well yesterday, right? He executed off high ball screens with Jay Huff setting screens. I think we need to feed Sam in the low post or high post. And we also need to, I think we need to get Reese the ball in some more scenarios, right? I think we just need to start figuring out, and Jay in the low post, right? We sort of need to figure out the guys that we need to feed and figure out where they're most effective and go to them there, right? I mean, it's not complicated. It doesn't have to be complicated. Maybe we, you know, simplifying it could help, but just simplifying it in terms of getting these guys the ball where they're going to be most successful.
Mark, what do you think?
So when you say simplify it, like these are offenses that, of course, the coaching staff has studied for a long time. I don't know. And I said this in the beginning of the season, these offenses fit the personnel that are on this team right now, right? Like Kyle Guy was so ridiculously good at curling off screens, catching in the air, shoot, turning and shooting, and scoring off the mover blocker. It was insane. Joe Harris, Malcolm, Justin, Ty to some extent, or Ty, Dre, all those guys were good athletes and could catch it and could really shoot it, right? I'm not sure that UVA, I haven't seen Trey yet. He might be able to do it. Has a kid who can really catch and shoot on the move, who's athletic enough to turn and face while catching and learn to flare. And we don't, and also we might not know, because how many times have they played against teams to defend it? It's been so few times, right? So they haven't had the reps. Maybe these guys can do it. I just don't know. It's one of my question marks. And the five out offense, when you play against a San Francisco or you play against a Towson State or you play against a St. Francis of PA, it's different than playing against Gonzaga. It's different than playing against Michigan State. It's different than playing against Villanova. By the way, I just heard that Jay Wright, someone sent a text, has COVID. So wishing all the best to him and recovery. When you play against Gonzaga, it's just not going to be the same. When you play the ACC, that offense, if you don't have the athletes, if you don't have the shooters, I don't know if that offense works. Maybe it does. Maybe it works great. I do know one thing that I'm watching is that on that five-out offense, when the big catches at the top of the key, the opposing, the defense just sags in the paint. Right? So you're almost at 4-on-5 in the half-court set, unless you're okay with your big shooting three. And I've watched a big shoot at three once in a while, and when they miss, they don't even look at the basket anymore if they miss one time. Right. So if you're okay with the big taking threes, I think the off and if you have a big that can shoot a three, then fine. Or if you have a big that can go by his man at the top of the key to create space. But beating someone off the dribble at San Francisco or St. Francis, PA is different than trying to beat someone off the dribble at Duke and Gonzaga. So the ball screens are, of course, are going to be solid depending on your personnel. And again, as we keep talking about, this team is going to improve and they're going to improve in every way. So it's hard to make a decision on should you just, you know, desert the existing offense. I don't know if that's the answer, but I'm not a huge fan of the five out with not having an effective big be able to catch and shoot or letting the guy big catch and shoot at the top of the key.
Well, I think Jay can be that guy for you. I think when he only plays 13 minutes and all of a sudden you're relying on Caden and Justin McCoy, and then when you realize that it's not working with them, then you play Sam Hauser at the five, which they did way too much yesterday, then you're just going to get burned defensively. So I think the big key there is you got to have Jay on the floor and he has to be aggressive. I also think that the issue with that five out is that I don't know if the wings and most of the guards on this team can get by a guy without help. Right. That's why you have ball screens. That's why you use pin downs and flares to get guys space. Kihei's really been the only guy. The backcourt has been able to get by anybody without help. Right. And even he is, you know, he's still pretty small. And when the help defense comes, it can get difficult. And that's just the fact of the matter. Like, you know, if Sam Hauser and Trey Murphy could blow by their guy and put a shoulder into somebody and finish at the rim, it's a different situation. But yeah, I mean, the five out is difficult to run if you don't have the athletes and the talent to get by people.
I think the five out, the key word there is out. And like, I like that look. I like that set as a wrinkle in your offensive schemes, but not as a core principle. You know, I've been saying for the last couple of games, we just don't get easy buckets, right? We don't see them dump it down to Jay or Caden or Justin and have them operate with a dribble or two or, you know, jump hooks turning back into the lane. We saw Timmy do it several times, right? And when I was watching him do it, I'm thinking, why don't we do a little of that? I like the five out as a wrinkle, but we've gone to it a lot. And I think what it does for players, it encourages them to take threes that are either contested. I mean, that's basically what you're saying is we're gonna drive and kick and guys take threes. And we just truthfully haven't been that effective with it against a lot of the teams. I think it was effective against Towson. We went off, everybody made their threes. It was terrific. But when you're playing a team like Gonzaga, who by the way is in midseason form, okay, they've played all these top people. They were used to great playing against really good sound teams. We weren't. But I want to see some easy buckets. And when I mean when I say easy, I mean close to the basket. Not necessarily easy, but some post buckets. We have guys that can do it. I think Jay can do it. I think Justin can do it. I think Caden can do it. I think you post up Sam, who's got a big, thick body. Sam probably has a little bit of McHale in him. Let's get him down there a little bit. But we've seen really perimeter oriented. I think we took, what did we take, Zach? 25 threes?
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's the this final number. Yeah.
That's a lot. And, you know, if you don't have easy buckets, you're going to struggle if your shots aren't falling. So
that leads to the next question for you. Have is Hauser not getting open shots because defenses are keying on him despite our schemes, or does our system not fit his skill set? This is from YKD. Is there a way to get our shooters more open shots with mover, blocker, or motion?
Yeah, you know, it's a really good question, and you know, Sam had some looks. He just didn't make them yesterday. He's made them in some of the games, and he's played really well. If he gets his feet set, he's deadly, right? But he's not – let's not kid ourselves into thinking he's Kyle Guy in a 6'8", 230-pound body, like flying around screens. That's not his game. He is much more of a he's a much more effective shooter when he's facing. And yes, we can do more to get him looks for sure. But I think a lot of that will be dictated by feeding the post, looking opposite, setting some screens. The five out, I think, encourages people to take shots a little bit further from where they're comfortable. And that's been reflected in some of the games we played.
So Mark, so for a guy like Hauser, is he better with someone who can penetrate and draw in a lot of attention?
So, right. He's not Kyle Guy. He's not Justin Anderson. He's not Malcolm Brogdon, but they're not him either.
Yeah.
Right. So when you talk about how he can be effective, he can probably be effective in the post. He had a nice post move yesterday, or a couple of nice post moves yesterday. I think one went in and one went in and out. He missed a couple of open threes in and out yesterday, could have dropped. But even if they drop, it's not like yesterday Gonzaga just, they controlled everything, right? So those couple of baskets that what did he shoot, 3 for 11 yesterday?
Yeah, 4 from 3.
What's that?
0 for 4 from 3.
And I think 0 for 4 from 3 and then like 3 for 11 total.
Yeah.
And he had a couple of one in and out. Okay, it's not in every game are you going to make every shot, right? Or are you going to shoot 50%? I think one of the reasons he shot 43% or something like that at Marquette his first 2 years, he had a guy that penetrated and kicked to him, right? When he did kick to him, but Marcus Howard took a heck of a lot of shots, right? But he also had a lot of shot opportunities without being so closely guarded. And I think he is, so if he's on a team, let's say he was on Virginia 2 years ago, what's his role? What would have been his role in that team?
The shooter. Right? The
2 years ago, he would have been a junior, mm-hmm. right, on that team. How do you think his role would have gone? He would have played. He and Braxton would have shared minutes, or he and Jay, or I don't know. He would have shared minutes. He would have played a lot. He would have had a lot of open shots, right? Mm-hmm. Would he have played the 4? Would he have played the 5? Would he have played a little 3? But on that team, put him on that team for a second.
Right.
He gets a lot, heck of a lot of open shots.
Right? And that's where you want him. He's playing horse if he's on that team.
Right.
That's where you want him, right? I think that's where he fits you so well because he is such a good shooter when his feet are set. And I think he can be that low post guy. I agree with Hav. Get him in the post sometimes because I think he's his 6'8", 235 or 230-pound frame of muscle, of almost solid muscle, is gonna beat down some smaller 6'6" guys who are trying to guard him.
I mean, I would, if I could give him a, if I could send him a Christmas gift, you know, get him a highlight tape of Kevin McHale and Dirk Nowitzki, right? Because when he has had some moments when he's down there in the low post or the high post or the mid post where he is making some really nice moves. And that would be a welcome addition to our, our arsenal. And I think that when I say I want to see some easy buckets, that's not an easy play to make, but they're, I think, more reliable than 3-pointers. And if we add that in, we can be really dangerous.
We got Dragon joining us for a live question. All right. You're the first one to jump on.
B-Drag.
What's going on?
What's up, fellas?
What's up, B-Drag?
Nothing much. How are you guys doing?
Good, man.
Everything's good. Happy New Year. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. All of it to you guys for sure.
Did you have a question that top of mind?
Oh, yeah. I got a lot of questions. but no, I mean, I guess, you know, last time we were on the phone, we talked about ideal starting lineup, ideal lineups. And, you know, we're 4 games in now. And I have no idea what the ideal mix is for this team in terms of lineup. And I just wanted to go around the room and hear other opinions to see what you guys thought.
T-Dubs, you're asking a lot of questions, and I think you should be given the mic. what's your ideal starting lineup?
For me, I always think defensively, what is their strong suit? And I think most people think Sam and Jay are great because of their offense, but on defense, that combination is not very terrifying. So I would think Caden is looking great in terms of moving his feet and being really active. So I think if you're going to play Jay, you probably need Caden in there with him. Or if you're going to play Sam, you probably need someone like that. Or maybe it's Justin McCoy. I don't know. Like, that combination still isn't set to me. I just feel like I've talked about it before. If you're one of the guards and you got your man, and you know the guys behind you are Sam and Jay, you probably don't want your guy to get around you, right? Because the help is going to be – that's not their strong suit. So I would think you need a helper in there when you got those two guys. But they're definitely the most talented on offense. So it's a tough call. I don't really have a good answer for that. I think I like the on the backcourt, I really like Kihei and Reese, you know, back there. That seems like a good combination. But then it's the rest of it that is just like, how do we solve? What do you think, Hev?
Yeah, you know, I think Mark was onto something. I don't know if it was this past game or the game before when he talked about the big lineup. And I texted you guys this morning. A lot of it, Drag, is going to be matchup related, right? And I think it'll change a little bit from game to game. But at some point, you know, when I was there, there was a starting lineup pretty much for every game. I like the big lineup. I like Kihei at point. I like Trey. I like Sam. I like Caden or Justin, and then I like Jay. And, you know, a lot of that will depend on if we're going five out. But I think Trey, you know, brings a lot to the table with his length. I think he'll bother some of the two guards. I think, you know, I haven't seen him enough in practice to see if he can really get aggressive. But maybe going big is something we should experiment with, and I'd like to see a little bit more. Justin and Caden have looked really good in their own kind of respective times. And I've been really, I think, impressed with Caden, how active he's been the last couple games. So I think he deserves a shot to get, you know, what I call like regular minutes, not special occasion minutes. Let's see some regular minutes for that guy.
How about you, Mark? What do you think?
I was going to throw it to Zach first, if that's okay.
Yeah, Zach.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can experiment with the big lineup. My issue with that is that we've already seen issues where Kihei is being relied on too heavily to be sort of, you know, the guy on offense. And I feel like you almost need to have Reese back there just to provide some secondary playmaking ability. I really like Trey. You know, he struggled defensively a little bit yesterday. But if you're talking ideal lineup, I think you got to say Kihei, Reese, Trey, Sam, Jay. Defensively, there's issues there. But ideally, you know, those guys could survive. You know, Jay may not be the most, he's not Momedy, he's not an Akil, he's not a Zay, but he can block shots as a help defender, right? He can erase stuff that way. So if you can rely on that, rely on Kihei and Reese to stay in front of their guy, maybe Trey can bother some people with his length, and then Sam can just get the rotations down. I think that's probably the ideal lineup, just because they give you the most offensively, right? Those three guys on the front court can all shoot. Kihei can hit shots. Reese can make some plays. And if you can get Kihei and Reese both sort of attacking on ball screens, maybe that's in sort of a continuity ball screen set, and allow them to space the floor with the other three guys, I think that could yield a lot of positive results. And then if they can just survive defensively, because I think no matter what, this team isn't going to be a lockdown defensive team, and they're going to have to rely on being efficient offensively and then just not getting burned on defense. And I think that, you know, it's clear that a lot of these guys still haven't totally nailed down the pack line. And I think, you know, ideally by season's end, you know, Sam, Trey will have, and Jay can step up defensively as a shot blocker. And then you can utilize that lineup on the offensive end. You know, I think the idea of bringing Justin and Caden in there is great, but, I think, you know, if you're looking ideal starting lineup, ideal lineup sort of in the last 5 minutes of a game, you know, those are two different things. I think ideally you want to have your best offensive lineup on the floor with for this team, and then just hope to survive. You know, you can have Kihei lock people down in the backcourt, and then just sort of, you know, hope that your help defense holds up in the front court.
So I think it's interesting, T-Dubs, you mentioned that, and I, first of all, I agree with you and have, like, you're going to have a fixture of three guys, right, that are going to start, I think, always. You got Kihei, you got Sam, and you got Jay. Those three guys, I think, have started every game. Well, Kihei didn't start the one game because he was punished.
Yeah.
But outside of that, he's going to start, right? Those three guys, I don't see much movement in those guys not starting each game. I think you're going to – I think we'll see Trey Moore start, and then it's either going to be Casey or Reese, right? And Reese just did not look – looked a little hesitant yesterday for whatever reason. I think he had been playing well. And Casey just has not hit his stride yet. And if he does, he's going to be really good. I really believe that. Once he feels comfortable, and if he does, if and when he does, I think he becomes really comfortable and really good. But you talked about feeling the defense, right? And if you have, if you minimize the penetration, right? And you have Kihei, not too many people are going to penetrate on Kihei. Not too many people are going to penetrate on Reese. And for the most part, Casey too. But if there is that penetration, who do you have behind you, right? So if I know I can push up on people and press them, and even if they go by me, there's a shot blocker, a rim protector there, it's a lot more comforting, right? I'm not sure, right? Like Sam and Jay are going to continue to improve defensively, and Jay's gotten a lot better, a heck of a lot better, and he'll continue, and Sam will get better too. But right now, you're right. It's not the most terrifying, right, intimidating defensive team, defensive bigs that are trying to help and rotate. And everybody and Sam is still trying to learn the pack line as other people are as well. So if I'm coaching, my five is Sam, Jay, Trey, Kihei, and I think you mixed up a little bit at that next spot. Sometimes maybe it's Caden, sometimes it's Justin, sometimes it's Reese, and sometimes it's Casey.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. I think, you know, it'll be dictated again by matchups, but I really like what I've seen out of Caden. And it's been limited, right? He's played some meaningful minutes, but not regular minutes. I'd like to see him get comfortable out there, catch his wind, get comfortable. Shouldn't be a special occasion when he's playing. And you know, I think that'll evolve over time, but guess what? It's kind of time. We're starting ACC play. So, you know, it's time to get serious.
Yeah. It's like a defense that's reliant on great help defenders. And those are still a work in progress. Jay is probably most reliable, but the foul trouble, right? If he's coming out and hedging, and he's got to recover a lot of, you know, he's got to make a big play, and it's gonna be a block or a foul, right? And we saw that yesterday, he fouled, right? So that, I mean, if you're the opposing coach and you see Jay in there, you're immediately gonna pull him out and force him to make a play, and then what? Then you're gonna rely on that. I mean, he's gonna get in foul trouble, right? So you almost can't rely on Jay for that reason, but.
I can make one. I think the issue with the hard hedge is that you need help defense on the backside. It's not all Jay.
Right.
Like you can talk about Jay being slow on the hedge and recovery, but you know, last year you had Momedy and Braxton back there. You got Sam and Trey, and you know, those guys need to improve there as well to help Jay stay out of foul trouble.
Right. Exactly. So I think the combination is important.
Two of the four fouls yesterday were very questionable. Yesterday.
Yeah.
Very questionable.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's tough. He's in a tough spot, right? Because he's the one senior front court guy, at least one with experience, right? And you need two of them, as we've seen from years past, right? If you're gonna do that, you gotta have Momedy in the back to help recover, or vice versa, right? And years two or three for Momedy, he was the one that was the liability, and everyone else had to recover for him. So we seem to be missing that piece, right? I don't know. Maybe it's Caden. Maybe Caden or Justin can step up into that role.
Yeah, you look back a couple of years ago. Yes, Jay was there. Momedy was there. But with Momedy had Isaiah 1 year. He had Braxton for 2 years. And Dre
Yeah. Right. And even the guards were solid. Dev is a great defender. Mm-hmm. Ty 2 years ago was either first in steals in the league or amongst the leaders.
Yeah.
Right. And you had a you always had a really good defensive team. Right. Again, we talk about the games that UVA lost over the last couple of years. And you look at Duke. Duke played really well at UVA. They just hit every shot. Like, that's just that just didn't happen. And unfortunately, it did happen that game. Right. So that didn't happen later during the tournament. When we were able to win, and you looked at UMBC was a little bit different too. I think people refer to UMBC a lot. When you look at UMBC game, Dev was in foul trouble on some fake foul calls that I'm still infuriated about. Dre didn't play. Mamadi, you look at liabilities. Mamadi was a liability that game.
He was big time.
He just was not in it. I don't think he had a great grasp of the defense like he did in the 2 years after. Right,
the last season was incredible.
Season was incredible. He got so good at it.
Yeah.
Even his junior year, from the beginning of his junior year, or his third year, to the end of his third year, he was a different player.
Yeah,
he got really good by the time the tournament came around.
When it becomes an instinct, that's when you become right, because then you've got the weight on the right foot. You've got all the footwork down. You know where to go, and you're guessing in the right places instead of like hesitating all the time.
All right, what do you got next question, T-Dub?
So next question in terms of X's and O's is probably for you, Zach. How important is the identity of this team? Is it the X's and O's of the pack line that has the steep learning curve, or is there more to it?
Yeah, I think it's learning the pack. I mean, you talked about, the experience that Mamadi had to the point where it's instinct, You have two transfers in your starting lineup right now, and two guys who are in their first season playing the pack line. And that's a concern, right? And I think that's sort of where the biggest issue is, and not to rip on those guys. And then, the rest of the people in your front court are Caden and Justin, who admittedly have both been good, but they're, still relatively inexperienced. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's sort of learning the pack line still. I think that's the big issue with this team. And, I love to analyze the offense. But I think if you're going to point, the defense is the issue right now, and no, people aren't going to score 98 against us again this year, knock on wood, but, Gonzaga was incredibly hot, but there's issues that we've seen already for this team on the defensive side of the ball that are going to need to be addressed. And I think that's sort of the big concern moving forward. And, there's also just not the defensive sort of talent that we've had in past years. And so you can go as far as you can with X's and O's when you don't have your DeAndre Hunter, your Mamadi Diakite, your Braxton Key sort of athletes, right? Then the instincts become that much more critical. And when you don't have the instincts and you don't have the athleticism to stop guys straight up, because you can be a great defender without knowing the pack line in this system, if you can just stop a man with the ball. But you don't have those guys. The guys that don't know the defense aren't great defenders already, and that's where sort of concerns that's where everything sort of falls apart. And so, I think the big sort of thing right now is figuring out the pack line, buying into it, and getting to the point where, the help, the rotations, the recoveries are just instincts. And the big question for this team, I think, is that going to happen before March? Is it going to happen? Are they going to be able to figure that out? And I don't know. Not to be, super pessimistic, but that's the question in my mind.
Well, so I'm going to jump in with this. There's not going to be all of a sudden some super athletic, really experienced guy that's going to jump out of the stands or a transfer that's going to magically appear on the court. We are not going to have that guy this year. So is this thing fixable? Is there a solution? Right? I don't know the answer. Maybe Caden, maybe Jay, maybe Justin, maybe Poppy. I don't know what the answer is. I really don't. Or maybe go smaller. Maybe go with Trey and Sam, right? Whatever it is. I don't know what the combination is, but is that thing fixable? And I'm not sure it is.
That's the next question from AJ. What is the ceiling defensively for this team?
What's the ceiling, you said?
Yeah.
I feel like we should quote Michael Jordan here when he said, "The floor is the ceiling." remember that terrible quote? I just want to back up and we'll get to that. So let's talk about the pack line for a minute. All right. We talk about the pack line like it is a mythological beast or some, you know, sacred biblical thing. These kids that are coming in, okay, while they haven't learned the pack line, they've certainly played man-to-man defense before. And essentially what the pack line is you're playing, you're packing in and helping, and there's a lot of nuance to it. I'm not taking away from it, but this is not learning Mandarin Chinese for these kids, okay? So I understand that when everything is functioning perfectly, it's a brutal defense to play against. And I think that comes with continuity, but we're not gonna have that luxury this year. So to the extent that we think we're going to get to that pack line defense when Ty and Kyle and Mamadi and DeAndre, we're all there. We're not gonna get there. We've gotta just play better. I think it comes down to competing a little harder and saying, you're not gonna beat me. I'm gonna be stubborn. I'm gonna just absolutely, dig in on defense and have that real defensive toughness that, when I played, I saw in guys like John Crotty, who I saw in Anthony Oliver, in Cornell Parker, in Brian Stith. I mean, we didn't play the pack line, but we played pretty damn close to the pack line. It wasn't called the pack line. We played man up and we gave away, we helped out and we gave away long shots. That's sort of what the pack line is. There's a lot of nuance. I get it. But I want to dispel the myth that nobody in the world can run this except for Virginia. In fact, a lot of teams run it. We're just not running it that effectively right now. And yes, that's trust and communication and familiarity. We talked about that. But, as far as us progressing, we've just got to get tougher defensively. I think Kihei is as tough as they come. He held Suggs to no points in the first half. I think the kid finished with 8 points. He said, you're not going to score on me. I want to see that out of Jay. I want to see that out of Sam. I want to see that out of every kid that gets in there. And, philosophies and schemes be damned. At the end of the day, you got to say, I'm going to guard somebody and you're not going to score on me. And I just haven't really seen that toughness like we've had before.
And if you talk about Kihei, not only did he hold Suggs, and I believe going back, and I rewatched it late last night, I believe he only let Suggs score 2 points on it of the 8. And because in the second half, they started putting Kihei on Kispert, who's a solid 9-10 inches Jesus. Taller than him, right? Just to get in his grill because other guys were losing him, right? And I mean, just to sort of go on a tangent and just praise Kihei, you could talk about him being a dog on offense, but goddamn, he is in the defense. He's the guy defensively. And have, just to piggyback on your point, Sam Hauser and Trey Murphy both played the pack line defense in high school, right? Yeah. Talk to Trey Murphy's head coach. I talked to the Housers, Wisconsin, that's where the pack line was made, and they played that at Stevens Point. And Trey Murphy played that for his head coach, Layson Perkins, down in Durham. And you're right. The pack line is just, there's nuance, as you said, but yeah, it's just help defense. It's man-to-man help defense, right? And it's not overtly complicated. And it just comes down to sort of, as you said, digging in. And everybody should take, a page out of Kihei's book, because he was ridiculous on the defensive end yesterday as a 5'9 point guard guarding people who are 7 and 10 inches taller than him.
Yeah, and experience, experience matters. If you harken back and say, oh, this was the best pack line team, or this one was the best pack line team, that's because they had experience. They played it longer. It's just like anything. I'm better at my job now than I was a year ago. Zach, you're better at what you do than you were a year ago. Everybody is. And this isn't asking someone who plays football to learn how to play basketball, right? This is things they've done before. So I think it's a little bit of philosophy and a whole lot of effort if we're going to get better.
I'm gonna debate you and Zach on not just pack line, but defense in general, right? So you look at Duke over the last couple of years. they don't always play man to man. He's frustrated because he doesn't think he gets guys. And I think one of the basic foundation is guys aren't taught on the high school level, nor are they taught in AAU. Nor they're not, AAU is not teaching people how to play, right? So you had Kobe be critical of AAU. You had other people be critical of AAU. You had the NBA be critical of AAU. And high school coaches are sometimes critical of AAU. And now sometimes you have the AAU coaches who are coaching high school and vice versa. So I don't think kids are being taught the same way often. And New York is just bad. New York coaching is just void of qualified people who are teaching the basic principles. And we're not teaching the basic principles when a kid first starts touching a basketball, 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, then maybe it is almost like learning a new language, right? When you get to college.
That's a good point.
Did it take? How long did it take somebody to really learn how to play to actually see the ball and man constantly in college basketball, where the guys are so good? And if you turn your head for a second, this, while I'm speaking, it reminds me of a play with Casey, right? Casey turned his head for a second, and while he was guarding Chris Burke, and I don't mean to pick on Casey, I'm just play comes to mind. And like, you are supposed to be able to see ball and man. Now, maybe you don't leave Corey Chris Burke because he's such a good shooter, but he turned his head for a split second. Next thing you know, he's getting hit with two screens and Kispert's wide open, right? And so if your instruction is, no matter what, like in the NBA, there's certain guys you don't leave. So if that was the instruction, and we don't know what the instruction was because we weren't in the huddle, and the instruction was, Casey, I don't care what happens. Do not turn your head. Follow this guy around. Now, if this is the first time you're hearing this, it's not necessarily that easy to follow that instruction. Like, how many times were we told by our parents, clean your room, clean your room, clean your room? How many times did we go clean our rooms?
Yeah.
Right. Now, I know that's something that we did not want to do. And defense, I assume, is that we all want to be good defensive players if you come to Virginia. But even still, now you're being heard in a brand new message. And when you hear a brand new message, do we immediately get it? Go back to your point, Hav. How long after a year, we're a lot better in something.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that defense is always so easy, right? Especially.
Oh, I don't think it's easy. And if I said that.
No, you didn't. You did not.
I'll take it back.
You did not.
What I want to see is. Yeah, what I want to see, and you know, Tony recruits for his system. I doubt he's any of the kids on the team haven't played man-to-man in high school and understand principles. Otherwise, I just don't think, I think he would see that and maybe not recruit them. And there are kids out there like that, right? And they're talented, and maybe they go to Kentucky, for instance. But Tony's not looking at those kids. What I want to see is I want to see someone get pissed off. Okay. I want to see someone get angry, pull people together, slap the ball and say, let's go. We're getting embarrassed. I mean, we had a lot of guys on our team that did that. You know, when I first got there, it was Crotty and Stiff. Later, and Ted Jeffries and Cornell Parker and Anthony Oliver. And these guys prided themselves on playing really hard, playing really good defense. And yeah, it was nice to get a dunk and splash a three and look smooth. But the core foundation was, we're going to be really tough and we're going to make it hard for you.
So I'm going to ask you this, Hav. You just mentioned some incredible, incredible players. I don't know. You're talking about B-Stith, who was how long did he play in the NBA? 12 years, whatever it was.
12 years.
And he was a good NBA player. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, hey, he's the 12th man or the 11th man or 10th man. You're talking about a guy that started and had a great career, right? Or if he didn't start, he contributed heavily. And so when you look at this UVA team and you look at them individually, they're all really good. And I don't mean this to a slight to any of them, because they play at a level that I wish I could. I dreamed about playing, right? And I went to a small Division I school and played. At the same time, there's also some guys are just better than other guys. That's just the fact of the matter. Some guys will never be as good as somebody else. I will never, wow. Like, some people, most people, like, you look at the 7.5 billion people in the world. How many people are as good as Brian Stith? How many people are as good as Kyle Guy catching and shooting? They are in classes by themselves. So one point I'm going to agree with you on is that everybody can't be those guys. In fact, 99.9% of people can't be those guys. So I think the issue that everybody's missing is this team is good. They're not great, right? They're good. But, you know, there's only a few people that are that can make it to the NBA. What I do agree with you on is, okay, let's get a little tougher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's just come on. Let's get fine in our hearts. If we got to punch, if I got to get through a screen and foul somebody while getting through a screen because I'm not going to let Corey Kispert get a shot off, then that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, right. I mean, the one guy who looked a little bit pissed off yesterday, and there was only one, was Kihei.
Yep.
Right,
yep.
And you could see him getting pissed, and you know, what I would have preferred to see, and I think Casey has this in him for sure. Casey, foul the shit out of Kispert. Like, if they had put me in there and he came off the screen, I would have fouled the shit out of him.
Thank you.
And I don't swear. That's my first two swears on locker room access.
I'm not at home, so I don't have my bell to ding you.
Yeah, yeah. But somebody needed to whack that guy.
Yeah.
Give him a bump. Put him on the ground. Make him pick himself up. You know, that's how we played when we were there. And if some guy was going off like that, he definitely started getting bumped and boxed out really hard and fouled really hard. So enough about being smooth and looking cool. And I know you averaged a lot in high school and you've got cool gear and warm-ups and everything's really nice. You know, I want to see someone get really pissed off and get up in someone's grill and say, you're just not going to catch it. And if you do catch it, I'm going to foul you hard. And if they had fouled that guy hard two or three times, he wouldn't have been pulling up from 30 feet and smiling. He would have been, you know, maybe rubbing his arm because it hurt. And I'm not advocating to ever hurt anybody. But be physical. Hold him. You know, box him out really hard. That stuff happens. And I didn't see it yesterday. And I'd like to see that moving forward. Somebody have a little edge, a little bit of dog in them. I saw it from Kihei, but he's the smallest guy on the court. They need to take a lesson from him.
I was impressed when Kihei guarded Suggs in the post. That was not he made Keith Suggs take a tough shot, right? You're giving up 8 inches, 50, 60, 70 pounds, right? Suggs took him to the post. He thought it was going to be an easy shot because he's got 7 inches on Kihei. And that was a very and it looked like there may have been some bumping, but Key, like you said, foul somebody or make it very difficult for them to get a shot off.
Yeah. Kispert launching from 30, doing heat checks, making them and smiling and running back untouched. That wouldn't have happened on my team. Someone would have
no
been
question.
To disrupt that flow that he had.
You got me sitting here barking like a seal. I'm so excited. I said the same thing. I was like, someone's got to put a body on him just to let him know. Yeah. You know, the play that stands out to me, it's actually when Timmy went down and he got a foul on Jay in the first half. It was like early on. It was a soft foul too. He did a little up and under move.
Mm-hmm.
And then he did that little mustache celebration thing.
Yep.
And I'm
I saw that.
One person. And then, you know, by the end of the game, him and Kispert and all of them were just doing it. And I'm like, and not one person. Yeah, you got to put a little bump on the screen or something. You know, it's just because that's right. That's Jay. It might have been a soft foul. You might have been angry, you know, disappointed in a foul call. But this guy's posing on national television at your expense at that point.
The only thing, and I agree with you guys so much, like especially, you know, wherever we grew up, no matter what, we were taught to be tough defensive players. Whether you grew up in New York City, Massachusetts, Alabama, you always tend to be a tough defensive player. And the only thing now is if you make a tough defensive play, there are so many cameras and so many angles and something could be seen. And you're not, I understand you're not saying don't make a malicious, but how do you differentiating and distinguishing between tough defensive play and what could seem to be intentional? The difference could be so minimal, right? So
it is, you know, but you got to remember. You got to remember, it happens in the NBA all the time. You know, there, especially in the playoffs, if a guy is going off, there's grabbing, there's holding. I would never advocate to injure or be dirty. But, I mean, when we played, if someone was going off in practice, it happened. You know, if you know, Crotty was going off in practice. You can bet Fresh was bumping him more, or Corey. I mean, it just happened. There was much less tolerance for someone having that kind of game that Kispert had. There was much less tolerance for the kind of game that Timmy had. Ted Jeffries, you know, would have, if Timmy was doing that to him, he would have fouled him so hard. He would have fouled out, but, you know, it would have disrupted their flow and made them think. And that's, right. Maybe that's a nuanced old school, new school, but you know what? Toughness is everlasting in basketball.
I think there's something to that though. Cause I mean, I think in the past, sorry, Mark, it's like they've had Jack, they've had guys like, you can't tell me if someone went that when Grayson was going off, Grayson Allen and Duke was going off, that Jack didn't get a nice screen on him. And yeah. You're absolutely right. There are a lot of angles, but you could still sit. I mean, he's a chiropractor out there the way he hit guys on screens. And that makes you think twice, you know, coming back around. And I'm sure he put a little extra in. And Sam Wilkins was able to do stuff like that. Gil was tough as nails. Like, you know, to everyone's point earlier, like we've always had that second big you've always kind of had a finesse big and a power big. It's someone who can just does the work, just gets in there and they make that hard box out. They make that hard rebound. And you know what? Maybe they eat four fouls because at the end of the day, Jay still sat on the bench for most of the game. He only played 16 minutes. So you may as well get your fouls worth out of it if you're not going to be playing anyways. You know, no sense in getting four soft fouls and still being taken out of the game.
Yep. And I think, yeah, it's so rare. Back then, I think it was more rare to score 20. And you scored 20 back then. It was like, oh, man, that's a lot of points. You see guys scoring 30, 35 now. It's a big deal, but it's not like – it's not unheard of.
Right.
And I think there are a couple of reasons for that. One, defensively, guys aren't allowed to play as physical, and they don't play as physical, right? And also you see guys leaving – I mean, I think you could do a study on this. You know, how often someone scores over 30 points now versus 25 years ago. And what
I'll give you guys a quick example. So I think my third year we played Alabama. They had a couple great players. They had a James Hollywood Robinson. I think Sprewell on that team.
And Robert.
I think so.
And Robert Horry, right? So good team. We had a home and away with them. They came in and Hollywood Robinson had been lighting people up before our game, you know, 28, 30, 27. I remember Coach Jones said, hey, be ready. We're going to lay a lot of fouls on Hollywood Robinson, right? So here's who fouled them. AO, Cornell, and me. That's 15 fouls, okay, total that we had. I bet we used 12 of them, right? And we just did not let him get into the game. When he got it and he drove and was doing his things, hard foul. When I got in there, hard foul. Cornell, AO, much better defenders than I was. They could hang with him a little bit. But, you know, I can tell you one thing. Kispert, as good as he was yesterday, his arms would have been sore today if we had played him, not from anything dirty, but he had a very clean and free game. He was open and shooting and no one was bodying him or doing anything. I'm not being critical because I think it's a learning experience, but you know, James Hollywood Robinson was really talented and we beat him up a little bit legally. And we won that game by a good margin.
Yeah, the first time around, he had his way. Remember that?
At Alabama.
Yeah, he had like
at Alabama. He went off. That was the year before, I think.
Yeah, the year before. That's right. The year before he lit us up, and then the next time we didn't let it happen.
Right.
Really cool. I know Mark, you probably have your flight. I'll do one more question. Save the Kent State game. Huff hasn't played a lot of minutes this year. If he's averaging 21 minutes overall, why do you think that is? How does this team gel with one of its best players seeing so few minutes? That's from Tom Majdonek.
Does that 21 minutes include yesterday?
I think so, yeah.
Well, yesterday foul trouble, right? Because I liked his aggressiveness yesterday.
Right.
He had a couple of blocks. He had two BS fouls against him. Offensively, he had a great low post move. He would look like he was about to be aggressive on a second low post move, and Gonzaga played great help side defense, and came and took the ball from him. Might have been a foul there. But he just seemed like he was like in a different space yesterday. And I think sometimes he does step up for big time games.
Yeah.
Like look at Duke last year, right? I think there was another game when we won big, right? So he wasn't going to play a lot of minutes in that game. So if you look at the other, there's four other games. I don't know the minute breakdown. I don't know the minute distribution for those in those four other games, right? We're 4-2, correct?
Yep.
Right. Well, there's two blowouts in there too. So
two blowouts. Sure, okay. I thought there was one blowout. So two blowouts.
Yeah, I think there's two, really.
So his minutes
are two blowouts in that.
Right. So his minutes are going to be reduced. So now you're talking about one game where he's in foul trouble, two blowouts. So you're talking about three games left. I don't know the minute distribution in those games. I don't know if he played 30 minutes. I don't know if he played 25. I do know there were a couple of games where he didn't get as many shots off as Hav and I completely agree about, and I'm sure everybody else does. Well, let me not speak for everybody else, where he's got to take a minimum of I believe, 8 shots. Hav thinks it's 12.
I think 10 to 12 is a good number for him.
Okay. Regardless, it can't be 2 shots, right? So I don't know, you know, sometimes if he's not playing aggressively, or don't forget, TB normally has a rule where 2 fouls in the first half, you're done. You don't get to play. So I don't know the foul situation in the other three games that we're talking about. If he had early foul trouble, I'd have to go back and look at it. But I think sometimes, you know, TB will play and the coaching staff will play guys according to their production. And so if he was producing in those games, he's going to play longer.
Yeah, I'll take a slightly different take on that. So
let me add one point to that, Hav.
Yeah,
the other piece is, the last thing I'll say about it is, in the beginning of the season, TB does, I think he does this, and I've, as a coach, I didn't do this enough. And this is one thing somebody asked me the other day on a podcast I was on, what have you taken away from Virginia? And one of the things I said was absolutely trying to be more poised. The other thing is understanding letting other people play besides your starters in the beginning of the season. So I think there were times in the beginning of the season, like the first couple of games, where he made subs, right? Where subs were the starting five was taken out early, right, to get guys extra, get guys more experience.
Yeah.
And I don't, and again, okay.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, Jay was a first year back in 1897, right, at the university. TB and staff, they know his favorite color, his favorite food, his, you know, what clothes he wears. They know Jay really well, right? They've had the benefit of being around him for a long time and understanding him. I think his minutes, you know, the reason that they haven't been as high is they just wanted to get a look at all these new players, right? You've got a couple transfers. You've got Caden, who redshirted. You've got the freshmen. At the end of the day, by playing Jay, they're not going to learn a lot. But by playing the other guys, I think there's a lot of valuable information they can get. I think Jay's minutes go up once ACC play starts, and you'll see some of the other players go down. But at the end of the day, my answer is they just, you know, they needed to get a look at the other players and not Jay.
Here's one interesting stat, just real quick. So in wins, Jay Huff is averaging 7.8 field goal attempts per game. In losses, it's 3.5 shots per game.
Wow.
That's 4 wins and 2 losses. So that's pretty clear cut, you know.
Yeah, that's why, I mean, look, I've been pushing the Flores name and his value this preseason. Our best version of Virginia is when Jay is doing his thing. So I hope when we get into the ACC play, he's getting, you know, somewhere, if you use Mark's number of 8 and my high number of 12, 8 to 12 shots a game. I think he makes us a lot more effective when he is a threat.
We bark about Jay being aggressive, and he's aggressive and he gets in foul trouble and he doesn't play. So he can't win at this point. Like, be aggressive now.
Delicate balance.
do think that one thing about Jay being aggressive is that he's a big guy, so Tony has to make the effort to feed him, right? Like, you know, he can, you know, if you're playing the five out, Jay Huff can do dribble drives all day, but he's going to be most effective if you get him the ball where he's going to be, you know, in the post where he can make moves. And we have seen a lot of that this year, and we need more of that. You know, Jay can be as aggressive as you want him to be, but he's not going to be able to put himself in the situations and the scenarios that are going to be most effective. He's going to need his guards and his coaching staff to make that decision.
But I do want to make a point on that, because I agree with you, Zach. But when he's down low, when he's in the low post, there are different ways of being aggressive. When you just have a hand up and you're calling for the ball, you know, I know as a guard, if the guy was really calling for the ball and really muscling the guy and working hard, I'm feeding him the ball. If he's just giving me the, you know, the Statue of Liberty pose, like throw it here, you know, maybe you don't do it. So what I want to see Jay is down there, all the work is in the positioning, right? The move you make and the shot you make is the easy part. It's getting the ball, catching the ball where you want it. All the work that goes into that. And Ted Jeffries was great at this. He would, if he didn't have position, he put his hand up, but you knew he didn't want it. When he was down there working and jostling, I knew, let's get it to TJ, because he's on, you know, in the right place. So I want to see Jay fight for that position, call for the ball, look like he wants it, and not do the, you know, we used to call it the Statue of Liberty, that just the hand up, like throw it here.
And Jay's such a great shooter. Does he rely on that so much that he maybe doesn't want to go down the post? Or maybe we're like, hey, let's utilize Jay as a shooter and not so much in the post. Because you're right, we don't see it a lot. I wonder if that's like...
Well, I mean, I don't think he likes being in the post. Yeah, I don't think that's... I mean, his bread and butter, you know, and you listen to him talk about coming out of high school and stuff, he always prides himself on being a shooter and a dribble drive guy. And yeah, and being taught like a guard. And it's what makes him special, without a doubt. But... yeah, I think have hit it on the head. It's something we talk about a lot in my house, is how often does he present himself, like truly present himself for the ball? And it's, you know, just the sheer nature of what it takes to get into the low post and get that position. It's not his strong point, because it's a wrestling match at that point, especially against some of the true bigs that, you know, without that he's facing now. And it's even worse now if you're going to have Sam bouncing outside, so you don't even have another post threat. I mean, he's getting a lot more attention. But, it's tough. I mean, he's in a tough position. I mean, I'm definitely one of his harshest critics, but, I mean, he's in a tough position. Like you said, we ask him to get aggressive, and then he gets into foul trouble. We want him to get more shots, but, you know, his game requires him to play one way, but maybe not the other way. And I don't know. He's a rare bird, just in terms of how he plays.
Rising players, Jay and Kihei, for a completely opposite reason. Right? No matter what Jay does, people love him. No matter what Kihei does, people hate him. So,
I think, you know, you do have to look at the offensive schemes a little bit. Like yesterday, we ran five out 58% of the time. The only way you get a post touch in the five out is the coach calling for it, for you to come across and get that mover blocker. They're built in opportunities for post players to get into that position, because once a guy comes off a pin down screen, catches the ball, automatically posting up. When you only run traditional move blocker on five possessions out of your 55 settled for the actual starters, like, or rotational guys, you know, that's where Jay doesn't have the opportunity to even do that. And yeah, I do agree with you, Dragon. I think, you know, he does like to be on the perimeter. I think, you know, he's going to have to make the decision, and the coaching staff is going to have to make the decision to feed him in the post, because he's got the ability there. Like, we all know that if he's dedicated to it, and if the staff is dedicated to getting the ball there.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, the other thing we haven't talked about this is what a great job game planning Mark Few did for Virginia. You know, I watched the Andy Katz interview with Kispert after the game, and he talked about in their game prep, they recognized UVA was so good once they were set and had the mover blocker set. But he also recognized that as soon as they catch the ball, whether it be on the break, the secondary break, or even in a half court set, the most open they were ever going to be was immediately, right away. So their philosophy was catch it and rip middle. And it really caught us off guard. I think, you know, we're typically used to guys catching it and we're set and they're like, okay, this is Virginia. They paid almost no attention and gave no respect to the pack line and said, you know what, we're going to rip it down the throat of the pack line because they can't set that way. And just listening to Kispert talk about how the most open he was right when he caught it. And he had to be, and Mark Few stressed to the players, you got to be really aggressive as soon as you catch it. And I think that was brilliant. And it clearly worked because we were really rattled from the go. I can't remember a game where, you know, it escalated so quickly and was really over pretty quickly.
Yeah. Since that Washington game in Maui. All right. Mark, have a good flight home.
Look at Mark masked up.
Zach.
Somewhat of a security hazard there, Mark. I'm shocked the airport authorities aren't checking you out right now with that look.
All right, fellas.
Dave travels.
Yep. We're back on it. Jay Willie, Tuesday 7.
Be Dragon. See you, buddy. Zach.
Take care. Thank you, guys.
Take care.
Take care.